political figures, journalists.
The E.G. Marshall, the television the stage actor, and his family came as our personal guests. And let me say in this connection, the difference, this is June 1979, they came again with another couple, Ann Jackson and Eli Wallach, also actors, the following summer. But the availability of travel in China changed considerably. In June of 79, they came and stayed several days with us in Peking. And then we worked out with them an itinerary of places they should go. Went to China Travel Service and worked it all out. Okay, they'd be here so long. That the whole thing was worked out. They exited, as I remember it, through Hong Kong. But they had a marvelous time. And then when we were back in the United States, we saw them, and they wanted so much to come back to bring Eli Wallach and Ann Jackson, for man and wife, and also Ossie Davis and his wife, but they couldn't make it. But when they came in the following summer, not summer, it was the fall of 1980, you could no longer work out an itinerary with China Travel Services. Even I couldn't do it. All we could do was get them the first leg, and then they were on their own, with no assurance that they could go beyond that first stopping place to the next place. And they went on separate routes because the newcomers wanted to see some places that the Marshalls had been to the previous year. They both came back to Peking because the pressure by this time, the increase in tourism was so great, the lack of guides, that they had deliberately made these rules to make small group travel much less attractive, and to force them into the bigger, more manageable groups. Then on the 10th of June, a dinner. The U.S. High Energy Physics Delegation. And they then had a meeting on the 11th, the only meeting I was ever in where they met with two vice premiers. They met with Deng Xiaoping and Fang Yi. Now this was a very high-ranking delegation, former director of the Fermi Lab, Chicago, Stanford Lab, Brookhaven was represented, and at this meeting with Deng Xiaoping, they were so full of praise for the achievements of the Chinese in high energy physics. Also on their instrumentation. They've been in the factories where the instruments were made. In fact, at one point, Deng interrupted them and saying, "You are just saying this to be kind and polite." And the spokesman, who was the former director of the Fermi Lab, got on the edge of his chair and insisted that they were not being polite. They were saying what they thought. As we were walking out of the meeting, I said, "Were you really that impressed by their manufacturing operation?" And he said, "Yes." He said it was copying work, yes, but very, very remarkable, very good. And of course, China was putting great effort into high energy physics. I guess now it's been downgraded because of the budgetary problems. Yes. And it really was a luxury when you consider their other great needs.
Well, you remember this was negotiated out, the American involvement in development of a high-energy physics lab had been raised on Frank Press's trip to China. John Deutsch had been one of those who was very enthusiastic about it. Deutsch was in the Department of Energy at the time, now returned to MIT. But by a year later, this had been pushed in the back burner. This effort required a great deal of coordination within the U.S. government, a recognition that special licenses would have to be granted. It went along with the major effort to sell a ground satellite, ground communication satellite system, Landsat or whatever it was called. I must say that a lot of bureaucratic effort on the American side went into both of those proposals. We were very serious, and then the Chinese backed away. You remember Bob Frosch led a second NASA delegation to China. The Chinese were interested possibly in reserving some of the payload in the satellites that we were sending out. None of those have led to fruition. I have a feeling that the Chinese drew upon some of the good potential goodwill, could have made some breakthroughs on the licensing front, but on their own side probably had not thought through the particular projects as carefully as we gave them credit for. I think now we're much more reluctant to just follow their lead, wondering whether they thought through the cutting-edge technologies for which they shop.
Right. Well, on this visit, of course, they concluded a protocol, which was signed while the delegation was still there. And I note I'd go out to the airport to greet Vice Premier Kong Sharan coming back from the United States.
He had a session with President Carter at the time. He was riding high at the time. He has since suffered a political reversal. But he was here as head of the State Economic Commission, and he was deeply involved in petroleum, Vice Premier. He began to suffer his reversal within about a year, I guess.
Well, that in part was occasioned by the oil rig disaster and the...
Who knows about the intricacies of Peking politics? My own impression is that the rig disaster was used more as an excuse than a reality. I think the Chinese are capable of covering up such disasters when it suits their purposes.
Well, of course, in that connection, the allegation was that it was covered up. The Chinese allowed the notion to get abroad that the trade union helped foil the cover-up. Sued the matter, ultimately picked up by Xinhua many months after.
I'm still more inclined to think that his main problem was overestimation of the rate at which petroleum production could and would expand. The contraction in rates of growth in 1980 were attributed to problems in the petroleum sphere. And at the same time, I think that Yu Cho Li, who was closely identified with Kong Shan in career terms, sought to place P people who had matured within the Ministry of Petroleum, in the Ministry of Coal, in the Ministry of Hydroelectric Power, and a number of other agencies, there was a discussion, you may recall, of a, quote, petroleum clique. And what is interesting now is that as Kangsha and Yu Cho Li clearly have diminished their authority, their power, all the people they placed have been removed, and now the new head of the Ministry of Petroleum is the minister, formerly the Minister of Metallurgy, the person who at the time Kangsha En was riding high was the object of ridicule for wasting money seeking to rebuild Anshan Iron and Steel. Now that project has been dusted off. So who knows what goes on.
Then we had the U.S. Conference of Mayors sent an official delegation in mid-June. And it was at this period that the Bob Hope visit was pending. He came, as I remember, it, to Peking on Saturday, June 16th. But prior to that, 2 days prior to that, I got, I think from Dick Holbrook, a message from Shirley MacLaine about how distraught she was with the fact Bob Hope was going to make the first commercial television production in China, claiming she had an ironclad commitment from the Chinese that she, in view of her past friendship with China, would be given that privilege. She then called me, and said she had hired 45 people, and she was very unhappy. Said she had earlier that day called Madame He, Wang Hua's wife, and that Deng Xiaoping himself had made her the promise that she could be first. And I said, well, I understand Bob Hope is coming on Saturday, this was just a few days away, and his advance people are already here talking to the Chinese. I said, I don't know at what stage their negotiations are, but I said, if you have a crew already hired, they're not going to show their production until the 16th of September. It opens up the NBC fall season. So if you have this commitment from the Chinese, there's nothing to stop you coming out, making a production, and having it aired before the 16th of September. But I said, I'll try and find out just exactly what the score is. Then the next day, I discovered that Bob Hope Enterprises, in the capacity of Linda Hope, who's his adopted daughter, had signed the contract at the Chinese embassy in Washington, and everything was all set. And that Bob Hope and Dolores would be coming to China on schedule in a couple of days. So I call Shirley MacLaine and tell her this and repeat that there's still a chance for you to get in ahead of them. She was, she seemed nonplussed. She was obviously quite upset about it. I asked her, when was this promise made? It was made on the occasion of the state dinner during the Tung's visit in January 1979. She was, of course, at table number one, that I knew, and that the vice premier had made the commitment at that time. So I sought out Ji Jia Ju, who was also at the table acting as Tung's interpreter, and he said, well, it isn't quite like that. He said she expressed her strong interest and hope that this would happen. And the vice premier said, as he says to so many, you are always welcome. And she took that as being an ironclad commitment. They subsequently invited her as a special guest to the 30th anniversary on October 1, 1979, but she did not come. Whether
And she's lost her China interest, maybe.
Well, it's never shown up since.
Yeah. Now,
Bob Hope did come.
That deserves a lengthy discussion.
Right.
While you were with Bob Hope, let's start that on the next next session. We have to go next door. During this time, we were in Washington discussing the trade, when to go forward with the trade agreement.